Tardy beginning of the meeting. The board did meet in closed session, and we had a conference with our labor negotiators. We discussed negotiating with California School Employees Association, Management Educators Council, and the Service Employee International Union, and we did mention San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. We did not discuss, well, at least when I was there, I came late. I don't believe we discussed, had a conference with our labor negotiators over our unrepresented employees. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, let's move forward then to approval of the minutes. And we have two sets of minutes to approve. Would somebody like to make a motion on the minutes of November 15th? Okay, Mark moves approval.
I'll second.
We have a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Any discussion or comment? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to the special meeting of November 22nd. Would somebody like to make a motion on that?
I need approval of the minutes of November
22nd. Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second it.
Motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there any discussion? Any discussion from the public? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to presentations and reports. We have our student representatives, Haley and Tessa. And Tessa, you guys have had some pretty good weeks in sports, so why don't I let you guys go first?
Okay. Our football team made it to quarterfinals, I believe, of the CIF playoffs, which is really fun to go to the game because we brought an actual tiger there from ZU. And a lot of alumni came out and a lot of the community came. So it was a big turnout, which was cool. Even though we lost, it was still a good thing to make it that far, considering years past we haven't. So, yeah, and our cross country team made it to state finals, and our girls volleyball won the league, and then our soccer teams are doing pretty well also. So, going good right now. In November, we had a campus beautification day where it was pretty much just ASB came and we cleaned up the campus a little bit. It ended up raining the next day, so it was kind of pointless, but we had a keynote speaker and we did some group activities and watched this video about leadership. Upcoming events at our school on Friday, we're having a live band perform at lunch. And we are also having a winter-themed week where each day is a different dress-up day, just because kids usually like dressing up in winter stuff, like ugly holiday sweaters and PJs and Snuggies. And we are having a winter formal dance on January 21st. And we are also setting up a student store in front of the new gym where we will sell, like, spirit wear and foam fingers and headbands and whatnot, and also snacks. So, thank you.
Thank you. Haley, tell us what's going on at Morro Bay High.
Okay, so during the week of November, it was kind of a dip in student social activities because most of the seniors on campus were taking part in an academic frenzy with college apps and everything, which I'm so glad are over. And so a lot of stuff like that. We had more things like a food drive and stuff like that, just low-key things on campus, and the participation was pretty high, so it was good. Morro Bay also attended the CATA Leadership Conference, and the weird thing was that SLO and Morro Bay, we went with just a few reps from our class, and then all the other schools pretty much came with their whole entire class, so it was just, we felt really small, but it was okay.
Could you tell us what CATA is, please?
The California... Oh, I knew this. Okay. The California... Thank you, Scaldi. yeah. And currently, we're in the middle of our WOW week of winter. We've done it before, and people like that we brought it back. Yesterday was our winter apparel day, so hats, scarves, gloves, and UGG boots were in order. Today was pajama day, and we also handed out hot, free beverages at break. And if you brought your own mug, you got more. And if you didn't bring one, you got a little styrofoam cup. But everyone looked nice in their PJs and their mugs walking around campus. Tomorrow is holiday hat day, and at lunch we're having a human gift wrapping contest, kind of like the scene in The Grinch where he gets wrapped up, so that should be interesting. Thursday is flannel day, and that's when ASB will be distributing winter sweeties that people have bought throughout the week, and those support the sophomore class's fund towards winter formal and prom. So they're just fun little notes with you can attach a candy cane or not, and you just can send it to your friends, to a teacher, someone you care about, and they're cute. And then Friday is the all-time favorite, Ugly Holiday Sweater Day, and we're having a fashion show displaying all of the lovely holiday apparel that everyone will be decked out in. And also this week, we've been playing holiday music in our quad out of our new sound system that runs out of the ASB room, so everyone's singing Jingle Bells and Rudolph at break and at lunch, and they like it. And we've also tested it with just non-Christmas music, and we're going to continue throughout the year just having fun stuff, so Mondays aren't as bad. We'll play happy, upbeat music, and Friday we'll have, like, Friday music, so it's pretty cool. And finals week is next week, so everyone's kind of in a studying frenzy trying to get everything done, and then we're going to have break, which will be really nice. The ASB class is preparing for their mini mock rock assembly, and it's going to be really cool. And then we're having our annual holiday party on Monday where we play White Elephant and have a potluck. And also this Monday at the Performing Arts Center, the Morro Bay High School choirs, the Los Osos Middle School choirs, and the 6th grade choirs will be conducting their annual winter concert, and it's at 7 p.m., and it'd be nice if you all came. And that's it.
Isn't there something going on Tuesday night at the PAC as well?
And the band concert is at the same time on Tuesday night. I'm a choir member, so it doesn't really pertain to me.
I'm sure Mr. Bellier would like to hear that one.
I love Mr. Bellier, but I can't toot a horn to save my life. So.
Well, thank you very much. As always, you're welcome to stay, or, you know, we know that you've got lots to do. It sounds like you're both pretty busy, so
I actually had a question about what will follow.
Yes.
Is there going to be a discussion of the Learning Center that's at Morro Bay, or is that not tonight? No? Okay.
Haley, there will be just a quick video clip, but that's going to be during the end of my presentation,
okay.
So... I think you're in it. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And I should tell you that at the last meeting, your principal, Mr. Andrus, came and talked about their school site plan, and mm-hmm. that was something that he spent some time talking about.
All right. Good evening, President Unger, members of the board, Superintendent Prater, and Cabinet. Again, my name is Scott Gustafson. I'm an audit manager with VTD. Plenty of time up in the San Luis Obispo area, areas like Atascadero and the CMR and the County Office of Ed doing some smaller pieces over there. Real quick, just to give you an idea of what we do, we come out twice a year. I believe this year we came out early or late May, and then again at what we call our final audit to close out the process. The first time coming out in May, what we're looking at is the internal controls of the district. We're looking at areas like payroll, the disbursement process, the receipting process, and all of that, and budgeting and items like that. We're also looking at, that's when we do our site visits, where we're looking at ASBs, we're looking at site cash collections, we're looking at attendance, and starting on some of our state, what we call state compliance areas. When we come back for what we term our final audit, that's after the board has, or typically the board has approved the unaudited actuals. We come in, we audit the unaudited actuals, the financial statements essentially, and at that time we finalize any outstanding items for state compliance, and then we begin and finalize our federal testing. So anything that the OMB, the federal guidance has deemed necessary for us to look at, we look at that time, complete the audit, issue our opinions, and which is what we're dealing with here. I will keep it very brief. If you have a report in front of you and would like to turn to page 75, this is what we call the summary of auditor's results. And this will give you a real quick snapshot of the opinions, essentially. And what you'll see here is three types. You have the financial statements, the federal awards, and the state awards. The financial statements, what we're referring to, is the unaudited actuals. And when you see that the type of auditor's report issued was unqualified, basically means that it was a good opinion or a clean report. Different people term it different things, but that's essentially what we're saying. Federal awards, the programs we looked at this year, as you can see listed, Title I, Part A, the state fiscal stabilization monies, the special education cluster, and the Medicaid cluster, which is your Medi-Cal billing and your Medi-Cal administrative activities funds. That's done in accordance with the Single Audit Act and is just based on what either the federal regulators tell us as deemed as high risk or based on what we've tested in the past. So there's a method to the madness, and each year that what we test and how many programs we look at will change. And again, what you can see here is there were no material weaknesses, no significant deficiencies, and the report was unqualified. So again, in terms of the federal pieces, and we're speaking specifically to these what we call major programs that we looked at, there were no issues that we found. Moving on to the state awards, what this entails is every year the state updates their state audit guide, which basically says, hey, here are the things we find important to us, and if the district has this, you need to look at it, and here's what you need to do. So in doing that, we didn't note anything. And areas that are common with this is obviously attendance, the instructional minutes, the CSR. If the school has, the charter school, Bellevue would have pieces to that. So all of that's encompassed in this. And again, an unqualified opinion, just a clean opinion. It means that we looked at everything we were required to from the state and didn't find anything worth noting. Beyond that, the district, it looks like, ended the year with a healthy reserve, which is great. All too often, we're in here talking about the opposite, which can bring up some hard times down the road. So it's always good to see that that's in place and that you're continuing to strive to keep it that way. Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Can you hear me? I am on. Okay, thank you very much for your work, and congratulations to Julie Lang and Russell Miller for again bringing us a clean audit report. I had a question when I was reading through this, and I'm sure that it's said this for all the years I've been on the board, and I just never noticed it. You did answer my question where it says type of auditor's report issued unqualified. I assume that didn't reflect on the abilities of your firm. So I had to call Mr. Miller to ask him what an unqualified audit was, and he explained to me, and I don't know, Russell, would you explain to the rest of the board the different types of audits? This is probably, accounting 1A, but I didn't know it.
Well, from the auditor's perspective, and he can answer it probably better than me, we have qualified, we have unqualified, we have qualified, and we have negative and adverse, and it depends on some of the findings that they make or issues that they don't see, primarily centered around your ability to continue.
So maybe I had a huge problem with the cafeteria, for example, and we felt like whatever was happening there, the numbers weren't correct, nothing was being reported correctly. What my opinion would then say is everything's great except for the cafeteria. I can't give you an opinion on whether or not it's correct because I can't tell. And that adverse is getting into the deeper levels of I think something is just truly wrong, where basically what then I'm trying to say to the reader of the financials is you shouldn't be relying on these numbers. Beyond that, it goes into what Mr. Miller stated regarding Ability to continue as a going concern is what we refer to it as. So your ability to continue operations, and our main focus is in that next fiscal year. And then, again, focusing 2 years out from that. So your MYPs, your multi-year projections are very important to us. And how you're coming to those assumptions, if expenditures or revenues or increases are decreasing dramatically, is very important to us. So it is possible for a district to have an unqualified opinion but still have financial problems. But what we're saying, when we're saying it's unqualified, is the number, as far as we're concerned, based on being a CPA and doing things in accordance with standards, everything in here is correct, within a dollar limit and within what we call a material amount. Yes, it may be off by $6,000, but in terms of $100 million, are you that concerned about it? And to us, you know, we set those dollar amounts that we're comfortable with items being, you know, slightly off by. And
what we would think of as an allowable tolerance?
It depends. A district this size, off the top of my head, we call them opinion units. We break them down. So for the general fund, which would be the one probably most people want to talk about, realistically in the $30,000 to $50,000 range. So what we would do is, if we found anything in that range, we would go to management and we would say, okay, hey, we have this difference. As management, would you like to post an adjustment? And they can say no. And if there was one item for $30,000, and we would probably say that's fine, we're okay with that. If there was two items that totaled $60,000, then we would go to management and say, you need to post this. And if management said, we don't want to, which is entirely okay, that's when we would get into, then we'd have to qualify your
opinion.
Exactly. So okay. The unqualified basically means is we did not find anything, and we do not believe, based on our testing, based on our understanding of controls in place, that there is a high likelihood there's always a small likelihood, but that there's a likelihood that there's going to be something wrong with those numbers to the tune greater than, say, $50,000.
Okay. Well, we really enjoy being unqualified. And
I enjoy it, too.
And thank you for your work.
Mark and then Jim.
Thank you. I, too, wanted to thank you and the staff for bringing in the fifth year of an unqualified audit. That's, I don't know if it's unheard of, but it's awful good. I did get stuck on page 13 just real quick. Shortly, significant accomplishments of the fiscal year 2010-2011 were noted below. Just to point out one or two of these, although state revenues continued to decline, the district ended up the year with an increase to the ending balance. Again, thanks to staff. I appreciate all the work that took. The district decreased future liabilities by paying attendance incentives. Thank you. These are great words. And then lastly, transferred $1 million into Fund 20 to fund the future liabilities, which is catching up with a lot of the other agencies in the state. So, and thank you for pointing those out.
Well, mine's more of a question. I think Mr. Miller can help me with this a little bit. This audit and the one required, or the reporting required, the county for 2 and 3 years out, how does this work together with that, or does it?
Well, all of the fiscal pieces fit together in some form or another, but the two reports you're talking about are separate reports. One is a report done by an outside audit agency, and they're ascertaining the validity of our numbers. The other report is our numbers as reported to the county of our results of our operations for the whole year. And that's our annual report to the county of our results. And then the auditors come in and they look at those results and they say, yeah, that's right, or no, that's wrong, and will you fix this? And I think only a foolish person would not take the advice of their auditors to fix a mistake. But we've never failed to fix a suggestion that the auditors have given us.
Thank you very much.
Mark?
Okay.
Any other
questions from board members. Well, we'll bring this back as item number 11, I believe. So thank you very much. And, also to everybody, Russell, Julie, the staff that was involved in this. And I think this really impacts the school sites as well because they get audited. And so all those folks, representative to the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program, Mark.
Thanks, Chris. This will be the last report for the year. I'm very excited, except for this very first part. The ROP board itself is grappling with the state budget cuts and the possibility of the trigger being pulled, and that could have some ramifications for the 616 nearly 1,000 students that the ROP serves countywide. But in our district, we serve 166, which is the second largest in the county, and so we're looking at that. Toward the end of the meeting, the ROP board, along with the district advisors, like our own Rita, is Rita here tonight? Just wanted to thank Rita. Rita, as an advisor, we'll be working with the district counselors at both the middle school and the high school to ensure that parents and students are aware of the ROP classes and the value that they bring and the options that they give students as A to G requirements, and that'll be a fairly new undertaking for the ROP. The success of the healthcare online program has prompted 5 to 6 other ROP teachers around the county to begin to explore and possibly offer next year online classes. Which means that if it's if you're in Shandon, then you can basically be taking a class similar to one of the larger districts, and it's worked very well with the healthcare industry classes. And just to wrap up, I'm going to send down to administration. The governor signed AB 1330, which I'm sure you're already aware of, and what this will do now that it's chaptered. If the district wants to, it can add to its graduation requirements ROP classes that would fulfill the UC units for art classes. And so some of the kids that are not so artsy, a little more hands-on with their... But this has to be approved district by district. So I'll get this to you. Thank you very much.
Let's move on to correspondence. Our agenda shows that no correspondence was received. However, at the board table this evening, we did receive a letter from Dr. Julian Crocker regarding a public disclosure of the collective bargaining agreement with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and he finds that the cost can be absorbed by the general fund without notable fiscal solvency concerns. And then the board did receive an email from Shannon, who addressed the Adults with Disabilities program. So thank you, Shannon. Let's move on then to public comment. We have several people who'd like to speak to the board. Mrs. Sheffer will call the names. If you'd be ready to come on up, that would be great. Remember, you have 3 minutes, and the board will not address your comments directly following your comments to the board. So you want to go ahead, Ellen?
Sure. First is Bobby Loomis.
Would you?
You know, I was looking.
Thank you, Mrs. Loomis. I was going to ask somebody to help you with that.
I was looking at the logo up here, and I'm seeing that there is one group where I feel there will be no success for that group. I want to talk to you about taking another look at the jobs for the teachers of the adults with disabilities. When a child is born with cerebral palsy or Down syndrome or Fragile X, they will have those illnesses for all their lives. They will not grow out of their problems. They will just get older and still take a lot of care. They will endure endless disappointments, hardships, and rejections. Their cycle of life will be far, far, far different from yours and mine. Now, isn't it the right thing for us to do our best to give them every opportunity for a good life? The 6 teachers you are eliminating from the staff have the experience, the education, and the skills to make this happen for adults and disabilities in this area. These teachers have volunteered to work for 4 days a week. This district has a very good reputation for helping thousands of the disabled, and now you want to give this work to AIDS? Please give this issue a great deal of time. I know you made a decision on it in June, but I really want you to look at it again. And the thought of bringing the six back into the system and back to the people would be wonderful. Thank you. And here I have over 300 signatures on petitions.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Loomis. If you'd give those to Mrs. Holmes, she'll make sure that the board gets a copy of that.
Terry Brown. Dear school board members and superintendent, my name is Terry Brown. I sent you a letter with DVDs of the student's spring concert. I came here tonight to tell you how wonderful the music program is at Morro Bay High School. The music program is one of the best programs at the high school. Bryn Bellier and Colleen Wall are exceptional teachers. These are teachers that have been working hard over the last 10 years to build the choirs and bands by generating enthusiasm at the elementary schools, through the middle school grades, and at the high school. The reputation of the program has kids talking excitedly, generating anticipation to join once they reach the seventh grade and continue through high school. Since my son joined the bands last year, I have watched with amazement at how dedicated these teachers are and at what they give to the kids. I'm so nervous. Let's see. They don't dumb it down. They choose difficult music and expect the kids to rise above their own expectations. While learning these pieces, they learn about musical history, music appreciation, and a variety of musical styles. Bryn and Colleen have high classroom standards of behavior and discipline. The focus is on learning and performing. They teach them team building. It's a team experience, not an individual one. They travel with students and encourage students to raise money to pay for it. This week, my son will be delivering poinsettias that he sold to our neighbors and friends as part of the music program's fundraising. He will get half of the profit from every plant sold to help cover the cost of a planned musical trip to Lake Tahoe in the spring. Bryn is traveling with the bands to Lake Tahoe, holding workshops with the kids and a guest composer. The composer is composing music specifically for them. Last year, they traveled together to New York City, listening to music in jazz clubs and touring the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. Bryn brings in professional musicians to demonstrate and work with the kids during the school year. They get a chance to rub elbows and play with professionals. Dave Becker, a saxophonist, rehearsed with the kids and then joined them at the spring concert. This was very inspiring. The bands and choirs perform at local events each year in local churches and at the Harbor Festival and Christmas parades. They perform at local elementary schools. Last year at the concert they gave at Del Mar Elementary School, I overheard two young boys whisper that they wanted to play in the band. Each year, we parents get to proudly watch them play at the winter and spring concerts. They dress up, stand tall, and perform with confidence. Bryn and Colleen work at two schools, Los Osos Middle School and Morro Bay High School, going to each school every day. They work diligently to encourage students. I'm almost done.
Sure, go ahead and just wrap up, please.
They encourage students to be their best. Not only are students learning how to play an instrument, they are learning how to perform in front of a crowd and how to work together. This program, band, and choir classes are not just about music. What my son is going to take away from his experience is the joy of performing with others. He understands the necessary tasks of playing music, the discipline and required work by practicing his instruments every day. What he gets from working with Mr. Bellier is a shared love and appreciation of music. Mr. Bellier works hard, the kids work hard, and hard work pays off. They are learning more than music. The music program is building character in our kids. Please fund the music program with any money that is available. Personally, I think you should give it all to them. Give them as much money as possible. Every child should be given the chance to play an instrument or sing and join the choir and or the band. This is a worthy investment for students, for our local community, as well as globally. Music is a lifelong endeavor as a player or listener. Whether students become professional musicians or continue to play for their own enjoyment, they will take this experience and cherish it for the rest of their lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nell Kaufman.
Dear Dr. Prater and school board members, I am here to ask you to reconsider your decision of June 7, 2011, when you voted to cut funding by the end of this month for six specifically credentialed special needs teachers who have been with the Adults with Disabilities program for many years, some dating back to the 1980s. This is not right. This is a terrible disservice. The special needs people that they work with need their expertise and practical experience gained over many years of working with their clients. My sister is one of the workers at Mailing and More. In 1976, when she was 14 years old, she suffered an electrocution and drowning accident. Since the accident, she has struggled with short-term memory loss as well as other issues. My sister started working at Mailing and More soon after Gay Donovan arrived in 1985. Gay has been so good for her, helping her to adjust after the move to the present facility. My sister had been used to walking around the building of her former work site to get some exercise during the day. Now that she was at her new building on Higuera Street, she did not realize that she couldn't just walk about the building, around the building, without getting lost. Gay helped post directional signs for an indoor route that my sister could follow. Gay was alert to the challenges faced by my sister and did everything possible to make sure that she remained safe and was learning the new routines. Try to imagine how long it takes for a memory to be rebuilt if you suffer from short-term memory loss. For my sister, it takes 2 years of persistent efforts. As you can see, these students are not ordinary students. They are lifelong learners. They do not have access in the normal way of stretching and stimulating their minds towards greater achievement as others do. Instead, instructors such as Gay work to provide opportunities for personal growth and to develop marketable skills valuable for the overall good of society. These students should not be seen as less valuable citizens of our society. Yet they are the most vulnerable because they cannot speak up for themselves. They must rely entirely on the good graces of others in order to have their needs met. If a program has been in place for over 40 years, would it not behoove you to carefully reconsider your former decision of terminating the jobs of these valuable and highly experienced teachers? Do not abandon your lifelong learners and their instructors. Realize that stability and consistency are absolutely essential for these students. Such a loss would take years, if ever, to get over. Especially for these reasons, I would beseech the board to reconsider their decision to terminate these positions, to visit these programs to see how beneficial they really are, and then to reinstate the funds for the Adults with Disabilities program. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else?
Yes, Naomi Blakely.
Hi, I'm Naomi Blakely, and I'm here tonight in my capacity as one of your two representatives to the CAC, the Community Advisory Committee for the SALPA. To remind you, the mission statement for the SALPA, for the CAC, is that the committee exists to create an inclusive community where each person is valued. We support collaboration amongst individuals and agencies in order to honor the dignity and promote the aspirations of people who are differently abled. We have many different activities to do that, including, for example, funding children, young adults who are 12th graders who will be graduating and getting jobs and helping them to buy clothes to interview. Every year up until this year, we have presented Golden Apple Awards to five selected educators throughout our SELPA. Last year was our last year to do that, and we simultaneously got on the bandwagon to promote the Day of the Special Educator. It was hard to pick just five teachers. And in fact, some of the teachers really didn't want to accept the awards. They felt that the turtle on the lamp on the fence post didn't get hit there by themselves, and to be singled out as opposed to being recognized amongst all their peers was inappropriate. So the CAC heard that and was grateful for CARS Plus approaching the legislature and asking that special educators have a day in which they are recognized, which is December 3rd of every year. And I think last month your board took action to sort of re-up for the Day of the Special Educator. The CAC decided this year to go to each of our member districts and to award you, to present you, with a copy of the resolution so that you can display it and keep in mind how fortunate you are to have such talented special educators working in this district, and of course how fortunate we as special educators are to be able to work with the students with whom we work in a supportive environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give this to Dr. Prater and ask that it be displayed prominently at a location in the district office. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to address the board during public comment? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to close public comment. We'll move on to item number one, which is the reorganization of the board. At this time, we elect a president and clerk for next year. So why don't we go ahead with that, and we'll open up the nominations for board president for next year.
I would like to nominate Mark Buckman for board president for next year.
Okay, go ahead. Is there anybody else who'd like? Well, okay. So, did you want to second that? Okay, so we have a motion. Well, why don't we? Okay, we'll take it first. So, we have a motion and a second for Mark for president. Let's come back to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one? Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Board discussion. Is there any discussion on this? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Okay, Mr. Quisenberry, did you have discussion?
Sorry. Well, I just feel that Mark has demonstrated leadership in various roles as head of the PTA, working with the San Lucia ROP, and I think he would make an excellent board president.
Okay, thanks. Other discussion? Okay. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to a vote. We have a motion and a second. All in favor of Mark for president, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we have three votes, and that would be four who opposed. No. We have four opposed, so I'm going to bring it back to the board for another nomination. Mrs. Webb.
I would nominate yourself, Mr. Unger, if you're willing to serve another term as board president.
I would be willing to do that.
I would second that nomination.
So we have a motion and a second. Do we have discussion? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor of having me be president again for the next year, aye. Say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Thank you. I appreciate this from my fellow board members. I will do my best to continue to serve the board and recognize that this is about us as a board. So thank you very much. We'll bring it back to nominations for clerk for 2012. Would somebody like to make a motion for that? Mr. Millar.
I would move Mark Buckman for clerk.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second for Mark for clerk. Is there any discussion on that? Okay, so we have a motion and a second. No discussion. I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's 4. Okay, Mark is now the clerk. Congratulations, Mark.
Let me just thank the board also. I'm honored and very thankful for the vote.
Okay.
Clarify.
The 4 votes were Jim, Catherine, Walter, and Mark. Okay, so let's switch gears. Yes, you do. Come on down. Let's move on to item number 2, presentation to the outgoing president of the board. Well, we don't have an outgoing president of the board. So there you go. So yeah, just hang on to that. Yeah, I've got my own ribbon. Let's move on then to item number 3, established meeting dates. Dr. Prater.
As part of our annual planning, we establish board meeting dates for the fiscal year, and so what we have here are dates for our board meetings for next year, starting in January. And what we have are January 3rd, 2012 to cancel due to the winter break, and so that leaves just one meeting in January. April 10th, cancel because of spring break. April 17th, to postpone until April 24th. May 1st and 15th, defer to the second and fourth Tuesdays, which would be May 8th and 22nd. And that allows for the week break after the April meeting, so it's a little adjustment there. July 3rd, to cancel. Due to the 4th of July week, and July 17th, which is typically the board retreat. Then August 7th to cancel and perhaps reschedule. And then again, January 1st, 2013 to cancel due to holiday break.
So
let me ask you a quick question,
yeah.
Chris. So
yes,
when would the January meeting be?
This year, January 17th.
Yeah, it's January 17th.
One meeting in January.
Okay. Any other comments or questions about the proposed calendar? Does that work for everybody? Do we need a motion on that, Kim? Okay. Would somebody like to make a motion on the proposed meeting dates or to establish the meeting dates for 2012?
I move that we accept the established meeting dates as proposed for 2012.
I need a second on that. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mr. Millar to establish the meeting. Is there any, I should go to the public, is there any comment from the public? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any discussion from board members on this? Okay, seeing none, I'll close that and we'll take it up for a vote. All in favor of establishing the meeting dates as proposed in item number 3, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 4, appoint board representatives to the Central California School Financing Authority, San Luis Obispo County School Boards Association, an annual governing board representative meeting, Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program, interest-based liaison to CSEA, and interest-based bargaining liaison to SEIU. And currently, we have Mrs. Sheffer as our representative for the Central California Schools Financing Authority. Is there anybody that would like to do that? Mrs. Sheffer, are you willing to continue that August responsibility? One of the most brutal, as a matter of fact, the one meeting of the year. Okay. Let's move. How about San Luis Obispo County School Boards Association? Currently, Walter Millar. Walter, is that something you'd like to continue with?
I would continue. However, the workload has gone up on this assignment considerably.
Okay.
They have a meeting now. However, I've done this for a while. I would be willing to yield it to anyone who wants to. They actually are taking up a few more items than they used to.
If you're willing to,
I will yield.
Yield. I would like to nominate Mr. Quisenberry.
I think we can just take a volunteer on that. Walter, are you willing to? So, Jim, that's something you'd like to do? Okay. Let me get this down. And Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program. Mark, you've been doing that, and I know that's very important to you.
Yeah. This year, it's a two-year appointment, so I'm finishing out my 2 years, so I have another year. However, with the loss of Mr. Angel, we do need an alternate this year.
Okay. Would somebody like to be the alternate to that? Mr. Quisenberry has offered to be the alternate. Is there anybody else who'd like to take that on? Seeing no one, Jim, you're the man. Interest-based bargaining. Currently, we had Mr. Angel doing CSEA, and since Mr. Angel is no longer on the board, I think Mrs. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Yes.
Okay, is everybody okay with that?
Yes.
Mr. Millar, you're giving up a lot here. Are you?
I know.
Okay. And Marilyn has been the SEIU representative. Marilyn, are you happy with that? I'd like to see that too. Okay, so do we need to take a vote on this, or is this just by consensus?
That can be a presidential ceremonial appointment.
Presidential ceremonial appointment.
I'd like to volunteer to be Ellen's alternate for the Central California School Financing Authority.
You know, I think we could assign Mr. Millar to be alternate for the Central California School Financing Authority. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on then to superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater. Or actually, I guess we'll start with Mr. Miller. Status of the state budget, and I'll bet you have a lot to tell us, don't you?
Well, there's been some activity, and I think that the premier piece is that the governor has released his tax proposals that he's attempting to put into an initiative. And the primary pieces of his construct is that there would be a sales tax increase of 0.5% for would get sales tax rate to 7.75% for the state. There's add-ons for local government that brings it up into various levels for individual communities. The tax would begin January 1st, 2013, so it's about a year out, and it would expire December 31st, 2016. There's an additional proposal for a personal income tax rate that would tax income earners of greater than $250,000 at a greater percentage rate. And there's incremental increases at $300,000 and $500,000 for those types of earners that get to that level. The estimated tax increase would bring in $35 billion over 5 years. If we average that out at $7 billion a year, that would be allocated to K-12 education as a education protection account. 11% of the revenues would be earmarked for community college and 89% for K-12 education. And these new dollars would be distributed on a per average daily attendance basis. So based upon your number of students, you would get that allocation of the $7 billion. 89% would come to K-12 education. The goal of getting the initiative on the November 2012 ballot has a long way to go. It has to collect 808,000 signatures to make it, and the language has to be approved by the Attorney General's office very soon in order to make the deadlines. The analysis of the tax proposal is that the construct is good. There's nothing wrong with further funding for education. The problem is, how are they going to apply it? And one of the experiences I personally have had in education and our relationship with the state over the years is that we have two problems. We have Prop 13 and we have Prop 98. And when Prop 13 goes into effect, it eliminates the possibility of any kind of local control over funding. Everything has to go through the state. When you enact Prop 98, you create education as a priority for a state budget, equaling 40 to 60% of the budget, depending on what the formula turns out to be. It's currently 48% of the state budget goes to education. So when the state budget goes down, the cuts are going to fall on education, in addition to other things, but substantial cuts to education. What this attempts to do is to delineate a specific tax for educational allocation. What it doesn't say is that the state can't cut education $7 billion and then backfill it with the $7 billion they're creating. So in effect, there's nothing in his proposal which protects the education community from any further suspension of Prop 98 or cuts through a deficit factor that take it down by $7 billion because they know that no harm will be done if they fund it from this protection account. What really I'm saying is the devil's in the details. What we really need to see is how they plan on implementing this tax should it be a successful initiative. It's another example of some of the conundrums that are faced by the state, and they have a major issue. There's an upcoming $13 billion structural deficit in 12-13 for the state budget. Absent a tax increase, which they have been unable to achieve in the last many years, absent the tax increase, the cuts are going to hit. And if you do the math, I don't know if it's intentional or what, 48% of the state budget's deficit is $7 billion. But the point is, we're going to get a hit in 12-13 absent any tax increases. And when that hit occurs, it's already on top of a revenue limit district's deficit of 28%. So if you try to operate your personal life on 28% less than what you're supposed to get, you're going to have some problems. And our education community is having severe problems in trying to keep its head above water in the face of 28% and possibly more. And the possibly more is going to be known to us in another month or two in the form of triggers. And the board has gone to CSBA's conference, and they've heard various speakers. And I heard two different speakers, and I heard two different predicted outcomes to the triggers. And the triggers are built into this year's budget as a mechanism that should the projections of the governor's office be too optimistic and measured in December 15th in terms, too optimistic, and I want to emphasize too optimistic because they were fantasy from the beginning, but too optimistic, then there is the opportunity to cut education by $2 billion. And that will translate, I've heard numbers between $180 per student and $260 per student, depending on the level of cuts that are reached. If the triggers are pulled, then that's the kind of damage that will be done. There's a feeling that the political consequence of cutting education in the middle of the year will be too great for the legislature to grapple with, and they'll look for alternatives to not pulling the trigger. There's also conversation that we've all heard that the recent economic events, Black Friday being a very positive day in terms of sales and the creation of sales tax, that the jobs numbers are coming out better than expected, that there are different revenues being measured from tax sources. The ultimate outcome of that is that they think the legislature might claim that there's an upward trend and the triggers don't need to get pulled because the economic situation is turning around. Whatever way the legislature goes, it does it. But I don't think, my suggestion is, the danger isn't in this year 11-12. The danger is in 12-13. The $13 billion deficit that has to be filled is not fantasy. It's not something that's just going to go away. It's a continuation of the same problem for the last 5 years. In the last 5 years, they have done great damage to the educational community, and they have a real problem in how they're going to solve their deficit structure for 12-13. They don't have any options left. They've done all the fantasy work. They've done all the structural cuts that they can make. If they're not willing to increase taxes, then the choices they have are horrendous to education, and there's just no debating that issue. So we have a lot to look forward to in terms of information and reaction to that outcome. I think we're positioned individually as a district in an okay situation. I think that the entire educational community is simply bleeding its heart blood now, and there's nothing much left after this if something isn't done.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's pretty much the message we all got was that no matter what happens this year, next year is going to be really tough because of that structural deficit. Okay, any questions for Mr. Miller? All right, let's move on to review of initiatives and site-specific support. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, board. That's a tough one to follow up. Thanks for leaving me with that golden nugget. You know, naturally, you cannot understate the severity of our state and national financials crisis right now. However, we also can't buckle underneath it and restrict ourselves to such a point where we forget why we're here. So we've created as a team 10 initiatives. And those initiatives are really nothing more than a framework. They're a framework, a specific framework for us to exist within and make decisions from. Based on where we are, we've been very conservative in our budgeting as a district, and I commend you for that. We will continue to be. However, we have kids to educate, and we intend on doing that, and we are doing that. So, with that in mind, I'd like to urge you to really start viewing the initiatives as a framework to work within to help students learn, help all kids learn that are under our purview. So the master planning objective tonight calls for a review of our initiatives to date, and site-specific support. So I was thinking, as I have for quite some time, how would you like to see that, or how could I reflect that? And so what I'd like to do is really start with a quick summary of how we got here. And so we began in January developing feedback loops and getting really examining the research as it is out there with the field of education, and we looked at our own student database. And so what we've learned is that our district is in fact not immune from struggle, and those that are struggling in our district, we have a growing population of students who are economically disadvantaged, who speak a language other than English as their first language, and come to our district with certain specific kind of struggles. We also have some very bright students who are exceptional in their educational world, and we need to stretch them. And so there are students in our schools that we can serve better, and the intent of the objective of the initiatives is to define that and to bring them the best that we have. So since August, we have done a few presentations with the board with the sole intention of creating a level of intimacy with your understanding as a board as to what's really happening at our schools. And it's sometimes tricky to do. It's easy to talk about, a little more tricky, challenging to actually convey. So we've made an overt attempt to, I gave a State of the District speech in August, and I laid out how we were going to accomplish our SMART goals in each of those 10 initiatives. I also, in September, we presented the first student achievement report, the first of three in the school year. And that first student achievement report really laid out a tremendous amount of information to the board. And some of it was overwhelming, and some of it, wow, there were some of those ahas going on. And following that student achievement report, which set really the direction, we presented to you a report on our interventions and how we're meeting the needs of our at-risk students, where all means all kind of falls into play. That was in October. Then in November, we gave two presentations, one on Classrooms of the Future, which we're still wrestling with, but I think coming around, and we're doing a pretty good job of coming to grips with that. And then we also gave a transitional K and preschool presentation, so you can really see how the rubber's hitting the road in that respect. And today, December, tonight is a mid-year update. So I say to myself, what is the best way, without really laboriously going through all 10 initiatives and staying up till midnight, which I know you do not want to do, what I decided to do was pull examples, real-world examples of what's happening in our district. And I selected two. So Jackie Kirk Martinez is going to present what's going on in terms of our integrating our adults, integrating our special needs students at the high school in PE, as well as a informational component for what's going on with our intervention specialist at Laguna Middle School. So Diane Frost will speak to that. And at the end, I'll just do a quick video clip. I want to thank Amelia Simoes for doing some work for me and capturing some pictures of our team at work at our school sites. So I'd like to introduce Jackie Kirk Martinez to share out some pieces of how All Means All.
Thank you, Dr. Prater. As Kim is putting up just a three-point slide, I would like to say that I have an opportunity just to do an introduction of this presentation, and it's really not me that had anything to do with this. I'd first, before we start, this is going to be a video presentation of about 5 minutes of a 17-minute video that we would like to offer all of the board members to see at a later time. We have the DVD available to you. The people behind the scenes that actually did the videotaping and the slicing and the final product must be recognized tonight, because they put a lot of work into this. And it was a family affair with the community spirit behind it. So I would like to first recognize Colleen Wong tonight in helping to support this production. Thank you very much, Colleen.
Thank you.
And also Jim Vicky, who also helped do the filming of this production. So, Jim, thank you very much. Okay, the integrated physical education at San Luis Obispo High School will be memorialized tonight, and it's starring Pamela Hostetter, our adapted PE specialist, Charlie Deeds, PE teacher, they're both here in the audience tonight, Kathy Steveson is our special day class teacher for the more intensive special day class, and Cammie Richardson, the special day class teacher for the less intensive special day class, and then, of course, our students at San Luis High School. So I am going to let Pam start the presentation. The first thing I'm going to do is capitalize on Initiative 1, Achieve Substantial Academic Gains with Specific Student Populations. And under D in your initiatives, students with disabilities will experience a full continuum of learning environments with team collaboration. You'll see that tonight in this video production with students without special needs through the students with the most one of the most special needs classes. And then Initiative 2 is, of course, the intentional culture of care. All schools will create culturally competent learning environments where all students feel safe, engaged, respected, and valued. And you'll see this tonight. Thank you. Pam? Yes?
Hello. Never spoken in front of a mic before. Well, what we did was I came on a couple of years ago as the adapted physical education teacher from SLOCO, and we sat down because we wanted to include our special ed students in our regular ed PE. And what came out of it was something that I look forward to. I come 3 days a week working with Charlie, and I look forward to that moment that I get to go on the SLO high school here to participate in this PE class, because I get to see miracles happen every time I come. And it's not about any particular group of kids. It's about all the students, and you'll get to see a little bit of it in the video, where it really is an integrated physical education class where all students benefit from it, to the point where I am having, and I think Charlie does too, have students that are on the campus come up to us and ask us if they can be in that class, and students that are saying, I want to go into special education. Truly, it's miracles happening every time, and I really credit our administration for helping to put this through, and Charlie, who is really the one that creates that atmosphere. So you need to come say something.
Thanks, Pam, for giving me an opportunity to speak up here. Love you to death. The things that I would like to, I haven't seen the video, which I'm looking forward to it as well. And Colleen, thank you for putting this together. When you look at where this started a year ago, Bonnie Parsons was our assistant principal, and she gave us all the support we needed by getting people together with Pam, herself, Kathy Steveson, myself, the PE department, and saying, what do we need to do to help these students? What do we need to do to come together? How can we grow? What can we gain? By putting so much together, what you'll see in this video is phenomenal. And each new trimester, we get a chance to teach new kids a chance when we teach them is to lose barriers. And by losing barriers, we all gain. And I've given this whole philosophy to them. Together, we can climb mountains. And that's what you'll see. And Pam, thank you for your support, input, advice by working together with her expertise and how we can differentiate the instruction. It's pretty phenomenal, and it's rather emotional when you get to watch the kids interact. So thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
The reason that it's a little different is because this is a fully integrated physical education class. We have a ratio of 2-1, and it's not just one student in the mix of, say, 30 or 40 other students. This is truly an integrated mixed class in which the activities and the curriculum is for the whole group, not just a student being in a class where I have to just accommodate in that general curriculum. This curriculum is designed so that all of the kids are doing the activities together.
Make it! Make it!
Go!
What do you think about your PE class?
It's the best class ever.
Why is that?
Because it's fun and it's entertaining and it's energetic. I like doing this. I like wrestling.
I find that our regular students have learned more because now they've learned not only about themselves, but they learn how to deal with other differences. And when they come together to help each other out, they can do great things. So I'm really pleased with what we have developed by this 100% inclusion. And there's a lot. The benefits, I think, are lifelong. Who knows? Somebody may need to have to deal with somebody with some differentiation that needs to take place. And so in doing so now as a freshman in high school, this is some experience they can draw back on. Plus, with the students that do come down and join us, they're in the locker rooms with us, they're enrolled with us, they finish up with us, they do everything, and now it's a part of it as if you should be able to look at the classroom and not see any differences whatsoever. Because I truly believe this, with all of us involved, the administration, the teachers, the paraeducators, our students at the Salinas High School, we're all students, and together we can climb mountains. I truly believe that.
So what do you think about this PE class?
It's fun.
And why?
Because I love badminton, and I love tennis. These are my favorites.
What about friends? Have you made friends?
Christy and Nick.
For the last year and a half, I have seen an incredible raised sense of self-awareness, self-esteem, self-image. I see a lot more initiation of students to just be friendly and talk to staff and peers, so that's been wonderful. When we go through the campus, walk into the cafeteria and walk into PE, other students on campus have been really friendly to my group, which just lightens their day and brightens them up right away, and some communication there, so they've built friendship skills. They've also been improving on their motor overall fitness and abilities and their motor skills and their goals and objectives there. So, I mean, it's really been a wonderful experience for all the kids in this class.
First of all, they have developed new friendships inside PE, and while they develop those within the class, those friendships extend throughout the campus, whether it be passing a classroom, they're recognized by another student, or at lunchtime when the kids are socializing. They have a lot of faces and a lot of friends to say hi to and interact with. They are assimilated into the PE group as a whole group. And I think primarily their leaders are Coach Deeds and Miss Pam, but yet the students are the strongest leaders. So they have the peer buddy helping system, and that's a great system to work under for them.
So with Pam Hofstetter's help, working with San Luis Coastal Unified School District in all levels of this program, myself as a regular physical education teacher, the administration with Bonnie Parsons, and now with Julie Mamobekias, with the support, meeting together with all of us going, what is the best thing we can do? How can we best meet the needs of all the students? With 100% support from the top all the way down to where we're at now, you get to see the results, and you've seen it on the film. To me, that's priceless, because now we're engaged, and it's all positive. The kids have learned to deal with each other. They not only have their own strengths, they have each other's strengths, and they're comfortable with one another. When at the beginning it might not have looked like that, but now we've developed this as we meet as a committee, as adults in working on this, we hash out and work on strengths and weaknesses, and this has become a terrific package. And needless to say, I'm extremely proud of it. I know the special ed department is extremely proud of it, and San Luis Coastal Unified School District should also be extremely proud of what we're able to accomplish here. Thank you.
For the team here before we go to our next presentation?
Well, I would just like to point out that Mrs. Hofstetter was also a County Office Teacher of the Year a couple of years ago, and she has continued her legacy here in San Luis Coastal.
You guys, keep up the great work. Thank you. I'd also like to shift now to Laguna Middle School and the leader principal there, Diane Frost. She'll introduce our new interventionist at the site.
Hello, I'm Diane Frost. I'm the principal of Laguna Middle School, and I'm so pleased to be here tonight. Last year, when the district office and the site administration began evaluating the initiatives for implementation at the sites, it became very apparent that many of them, if fully embraced, could substantially affect the success and connection of our middle school students. So that was discussions we had as administrators in the district office. We continued those discussions at Laguna Middle School, and we talked about what we wanted to concentrate on. We wanted to concentrate on the culture of care. We wanted to talk about substantial gains with our at-risk kids, and we wanted to talk about accelerated opportunities. As we continued looking at these, as we continued looking at how we could implement them on campus, we decided that we needed a little bit of help with this. We have a very dynamic team at Laguna Middle School. Our counselors are amazing. We have a wonderful assistant principal, but we needed somebody else to add to our team. Dr. Prater and Mr. Robinette and I decided to discuss the idea of a TOSA on campus, a teacher on special assignment who could really embrace some of these things. And thanks in part to your generosity, the discussions that we have, we do have a TOSA at Laguna Middle School this year. We were able to talk to a number of people, but Scott Scaldi from Morro Bay High School ended up joining us at Laguna Middle School, and he has done a phenomenal job. And again, there are a number of things that we're looking at. He's looked at our culture of care. He's talked a little bit about the accelerated opportunities for our kids, but this first semester, we've more looked at the at-risk kids on our campus than we've been able to in the past, and that's due in part to having a TOSA on campus. I really think that what Mr. Scaldi brings to us is he's allowed us to refine, expand, and target our interventions. And what he has for you this evening is a short presentation about exactly what interventions we've been able to bring to Laguna Middle School.
Thanks, Diane. So I'll try to keep it brief and make it as specific as possible in our summary of what we're trying to do over at Laguna Middle School. If you'd like to, Amelia, where it says more right there, on the right-hand side, it's grayed out. If you click on that, it'll go full screen, so it's a little bit easier for everybody to see. So this presentation software is a new one for me. I learned it from Sean True, a teacher out at Morro Bay High School. He showed it to me last year. It's really neat. It can be, we can click through and lead kind of like a PowerPoint, but you'll see it kind of has a Google Maps kind of effect. And if you set it up for students, they can click around on their own and just poke around and look at things. It's really neat. It's called Prezi. It's a private software package, but you can sign up for free, as I did. Anyway, Laguna Middle School Academic Intervention. So this is trying to explain kind of what we're doing so far, and a lot of what we're doing this year is new. So the first thing it is, you know, how do we find and help our kids? And so what we know is that there are kids out there, and typically our counselors will find them. In years past, and what we found in looking at this is they've done a good job without me of finding these kids usually. I help in the process. If you go to the next one, it just says, you know, where are these kids? Teachers see them, but how do we make sure we're catching them before they fall through the cracks? And how do we give them what they need to succeed in our classrooms? So our finding and monitoring, what we've come up with is essentially this. Every 2 weeks, I coordinate data, and we pull every single grade that's below a C. And we're currently using a point system that's actually turned out to be really good. It allows me to draw out data, and it makes it simpler to present and easier for us to see. So any child who has, say, two Ds, they would have 2 points, because we have 1 point for a D and 2 points for an F. The more points you have, the more intervention we're probably going to want to consider providing. And so every 2 weeks, we pull this data, and we sit down. Diane, and you can see on the next one here, Diane, myself, and the counselors, we sit, and we go through our lists at each grade level. Who are our kids? And so our list, essentially, is very dynamic. It's constantly changing. I updated our 7th grade list this morning, and I'll upgrade the 8th grade list tomorrow. And we also pull together information above and beyond just D's and F's, but that's the core of it. We have attendance data. We also have discipline data and counselors and their interactions with the students and their families. So as we sit down every week, we try to consider what should we do. And this presentation kind of operates in an idea of a menu here, you can obviously tell. First thing that happens is any kid that really has essentially at least two Ds, because two Ds get you 2 points. Those kids, we want to notify them at regular intervals, especially their families. If you click again, it'll draw out and show this whole one. So at every grading interval, the parents are going to find out, of course, that their children aren't necessarily doing fantastic. They might have two Ds or an F in two Ds, something along those lines. So if they have what we consider 2 or 3 points, they're on our radar. And at those intervals, which are progress reports, quarters, and semesters, we're going to send supplementary information, which basically says, hey, he or she's not doing too well. By the way, here's something we have for every student on our campus if you weren't aware. Here's a form that tells you your login and password to set up your parent access to your child's grades on PowerSchool. And if you don't know how to do that, you can come in and we'll help. We also make sure they know about our after-school labs. We have a math lab, we have a regular homework lab, and then we have an EL homework lab. So 3 different opportunities. Plus, the library is open if they just need a place to go. So we want to make sure they understand. And if they have any other needs that we're not really supplying, especially if they're because of financial, we want to make sure we know so we can help them as best as possible. I put a little asterisk that says some of these kids might get something from our regular menu. And that is true, because some kids, 1 week, they'll be a 5, and then they do really well, and they're down to a 3. So, again, it's a dynamic list. It's always changing. Our regular menu, if you click one more time, goes on over here, and we call these main courses. So we have essentially 6 different things on our menu that we can provide to our students. You can draw out, and it'll show all 6. It's Monday morning minors. We have a reading strategies class. We have an EL reading class, math connections. We have something we call student success partners. And then we have a period 7 student success partners, which is an after school. It's a 7th period class we've created on our campus, which is not optional once they sign up. It's, if you miss it, it's a cut. I don't care if it's from 3 to 4, or if you're late, it's a tardy, that kind of thing. What we have here is details on each of these, and I'll try to go through them quickly because there's 6. So the first one is Monday morning mentors, and so the students meet with our counselors every Friday. They come in, and they have to present their planner and show that they filled that out all week long. Counselor checks it out. Okay, great. Here's your packet. The counselors create packets every Friday with essentially a printout of their grades and key missing assignments that are recent that they should complete over the weekends. And there's a place where the parents have to sign off on this. They come in on Monday morning at 8, meet them in the library, and they have to show, there's where my parents signed it, here's my work, and they stay from 8 to 9 to get supplemental help. In that room, we have the 3 counselors. I'm usually there. I'm there for the first half hour, and then I have some other obligations. We have volunteers from Cal Poly. We have at least 2, and we also have instructional aides. We kind of have a bevy of support there for those kids. And that's for kids that are really on the cusp. You know, we sense that they're sliding, and we want to catch them and re, kind of give them that framework for success, especially the organizational skills. That's typically what happens. They're missing a few assignments. Mrs. Healy told me that she had a student this week that went from a 48% to an 80%. A few key missing assignments did that. It's amazing how much they struggle with the business of school. Next on our list is reading strategies class. We have the Read 180 program, as do two other sites in our district. Our teacher, Sandra Del Martini, is finding it to be really, really top-notch. So we've identified, mainly the counseling department, have identified kids that would benefit most specifically from reading gains. And so if there's a child that comes up on our radar, especially a child that comes new to our district, this might be one of the things we look at, depending on where their reading level is. And they go to that class every day. That is their elective. EL reading class is for any of our English learners that might benefit from it. We have two sections taught by Mrs. Ahern. Great opportunity. On top of just reading strategies, oftentimes they will actually utilize their core class textbooks, which means they're getting a chance to understand their history book, perhaps, if they have a reading assignment in 8th grade history or 7th grade history. Great class. Next one we have is going to be Math Connections. These are our kids that have struggled in mathematics, especially the ones, these are all 8th graders, so we identified them at the beginning of the school year because we knew their grades from 7th grade, and all of them had D's or F's. I think we have 16 in there right now. Two of them have actually moved out of the class already this semester because they had 3.0 or better in all their classes, and of course they were doing well in math. But I think of the children we have in there, and all of them got D's or F's second semester last year, all of them have C's or better, but two last I checked. This one is the easiest one to say, wow, we're really doing well. Student Success Partners is kind of a mentorship study skills class. The course gives the kids, if you click on it one more time, I think it'll go in because my eyes aren't that good. Oh, I lied. Forgive me. Oh, she's good. Look at that. Came right back to it. So they meet every day, and they work with their teacher, and it's essentially organization, study skills, mentorship. They're going to help these students successfully complete assignments, plan for success, chart success. So often it's about, let's see where you are. You're at 40% in English, but let's check next week, and I know you still have an F, but look, you've gone up to a 48. They make the kids chart their progress and set goals, and they create, and sometimes it takes a while, but they create that membership, that mentorship role, and it's another adult on campus that is making a tie to that kid saying, we know who you are, we know what you're doing, and we want you to do well. Because that middle school opportunity is the first one to have anonymity. The math teacher might know I've got an F, but the English teacher doesn't know I have an F in math. Well, now there's one teacher, not just a counselor or me. They're shocked when I know their grades. It's a good time. Anyway, it's another adult on campus making that contact, trying to bring them into the fold of the school culture. We have this class that meets after school. Mr. Nett, who's actually in the room, I believe, still behind me, is phenomenal. He and Mrs. Pearson, who often helps him, are doing a phenomenal job with the students that they have, trying to do all those things I just spoke of. It's really, these ones are harder to tell the success of right away because the classes are somewhat new to us, but it's a great opportunity to let our kids know how much we're trying to help them succeed. So, my quick review. Kids that are starting to do poorly or have, you know, moderately bad grades, they're going to have like 2 to 3 points. They're going to have two D's or an F and a D, something like that. We're going to make sure their parents know about it. I think if you click over, it goes to that one. I'm going really fast. I apologize. I know that it's late, and I don't want to waste the board's time. We're going to make sure that we try to make that parent contact and provide them the tools to take advantage of our campus. If they continue to slide and they have 4 to 6 points, that means they have at least one F, if not two, some of them even three. We're going to make sure they have one of these. We're going to offer it to their families. We've had very few, but once in a while a family will say, no thanks. The only reason my child comes to school is because of that elective class, which you're going to take away to give them the study skills class. And at some point we have to respect that. However, we're still, it doesn't mean I still don't pull for the child. I really want them to succeed academically as well. We're working on how we address kids who continue to fail. That's not an easy task. Just because we're providing this umbrella of help does not mean that they're succeeding right away. So, if you click again, we're trying to continue to expand the level of support in the circle of caring adults for these kids and their families. And every 2 weeks we get an opportunity to check in. Hey, how's so-and-so doing? What about this one? I saw that this grade went down again, but this one went up. What's going on? Have we gotten an update about, you know, whether it's a family issue, if the parents are in a in between housing, they're moving somewhere, or whatever it might be happening, it's a chance for all of us to talk and provide the best we can for the kids. The last little one clicks over and says that really, one more time, this is just a work in progress. We're offering a lot of new things at Laguna Middle School. Every single one of our things on our list are new. That's not true. Most of them are new. The student success classes, the math connection, and the reading strategy classes are new. We tried Monday Morning Mentors last year, and we had some success. We're bringing it back, of course. And the EL reading classes existed in the past. My time at Laguna has been wonderful. I really like it there, and I thank you for your time. Do you guys have any questions?
Just real quickly, you say you're pulling this data together on a daily basis?
No, two times a month.
Two times a month. And which system are you using?
Most of the data comes right out of PowerSchool.
Okay.
There's a couple of teachers who don't use PowerTeacher, and so that's one of the reasons that I use, instead of using a straight GPA, I use the point system, because those teachers, I had to say, hey, can you send me your kids? They use Making the Grade, which is fine. It's a great grading program. Can you send me your students who have D's or F's, and I'll put them into my list. And every 2 weeks is about right, because, as far as updating of grades, it doesn't happen on a daily basis for all teachers, with the exception of math, mostly.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Ellen.
I want to just express how much I appreciate this very short period of time of noticing a problem, catching a problem so early, and immediately addressing it. I think it's going to make a huge difference for the long-term, short-term and long-term success of our students. So
we're hoping for it.
Yeah, thank you for that.
No worries. It's good.
Well, Scott and Diane, I think this is a great program, and it's really wonderful. I have a question, though, about how are you dealing with parents that don't speak English? How are you making those contacts?
Our EL support department is fantastic. I cannot say enough neat things about Andrea Blanco and Barb, but Andrea is the one that I'm most often in contact with her. I asked her to contact, I think, 12 parents at 3 o'clock one afternoon, and she emailed me at 7:30, and she talked to every single one and wrote a paragraph on the response. If you haven't met her, come to our school and meet her. She's amazing. She's wonderful. She has great rapport with our parents that are Spanish-speaking. She's just a phenomenal gal. I really can't say enough. Without her, it would be very difficult. Well, somebody else would probably fill those shoes. That's usually the case. But right now, she's phenomenal.
Well,
thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Diane. Thanks, Jim. Thanks to everybody at Laguna that's really helping move the initiatives forward in our circle of care.
So these are small examples of what's going on in many different places in our district. And I've tried to, Amelia's done a nice video of other schools and intervention TOSAs. However, I'm looking at the time, and we have Common Core Standard presentation by Amy, about 5 minutes, and by Amy Shields. And I'd like to, if I could, defer that video to another time, if that's okay with you. Okay? Is that okay? Okay. Come on over, Amy. Thank you.
Check everybody awake. Good. Good evening. Thank you, Dr. Prater. I'd like to begin our very short, condensed overview of the California Common Core State Standards by first introducing two of our district teachers on special assignment who have really become the experts on the CACCSS. You're going to all know that by the end of our presentation, and we'll be providing much of tonight's presentation. We have, first of all, Scott Nairn, who is our secondary ELA TOSA, and we have with us Barbara Salitis, our secondary math TOSA. So we're going to begin with a brief history of how the California Common Core Standards came to be. And you all should have a set of the slides in front of you. Prior to 2010, there we go. The United States was actually one of the few of the developed countries that lacked a set of national education standards. Each state had its own set of standards with expectations that varied widely from state to state. The No Child Left Behind left it to states to determine what students ought to learn in reading, math, and science, how they ought to be tested, and what levels of achievement determine proficiency. For example, what constitutes proficiency for grades 4, 8, 10 in one state might be lower or higher than in another state. State benchmarks vary significantly, and that is difficult to compare test scores from different states. Yet, all students in America deserve the same level of rigorous and relevant standards. In 2009, the Council of Chief State School Officers and the National Governors Association Center for Best Practices coordinated the state-led Common Core State Standards Initiative. California was one of 48 states that participated in that effort. The goal of the initiative was to bring states together in an effort to set a clear and consistent progression of K-12 standards that will prepare all students for success in college as well as careers. The initiative brought together experts in the field, international input from top-performing countries, parents, researchers, and content specialists. The Common Core standards were released in January of 2010. The CCS, or Common Core Standards, articulate the same expectations for all students, regardless of where they live. The majority of the states have realized the urgent need to work collaboratively to develop a culture of excellence that challenges every student to acquire the necessary skills to succeed in today's competitive global society. As of today, you can see 44 states have adopted the Common Core State Standards. The Common Core State Standards make clear that students needed real-world skills for college and the workforce. They reflect rigor, focus, and coherence of standards in top-performing countries. The standards are intentionally... internationally benchmarked expectations for student performance, and they provide opportunities for states to collaborate with other states to reduce costs by pooling resources. In California, we adopted the Common Core later that year in August of 2010. California then inserted an additional 15% of our current state standards into the National Common Core State Standards. And the final set of standards is now called the California Common Core State Standards, or as we call it, the CCCSS. California felt it was important to add that 15% for a couple reasons. First of all, to ensure the rigor of the California's existing standards, that they would be maintained, as well as to address perceived gaps in the Common Core Standards. Just to give you a couple examples, they included formal presentations and speaking and listening strand for grades 1 through 12. We included in California penmanship and the language strand in grades 2 through 4. Career and consumer documents in the writing strand for grade 8. And an analysis of text features and informational text in the reading for information text strand for grades 6 through 12. All important things to keep in there. Of course, the standards do not tell teachers how to teach and cannot by themselves ensure the quality of our nation's education system. However, they constitute an important starting point in helping schools determine the knowledge and skills that all students must be equipped with upon graduation. In essence, thoughtfully written standards provide an accessible roadmap for students, parents, and teachers. So let's begin with the California Common Core State Standards in English Language Arts.
I can flip that. My name is Scott Nairn. I'm the ELA TOSA. I'm actually halftime, and my other half is Don Addis from Laguna Middle School, and we're working together, and it's rather enjoyable to work with someone from the middle school. So in the ELA standards, something that's added that's new is listening and speaking standards for all students. There's actually six of these that come in, including how to speak in a group setting, how to speak one-on-one, and these are new that are, you know, really exciting. I can cheerlead it all day, and I'll try not to and move quickly, but I'm really excited about the English side of the standards. Next up, focus equally on fiction and nonfiction, and there's also a focus on having other subjects such as science, Our shop classes, any technical subject classes, have the same reading standards as us. So there's a good collaboration that I'm looking forward to with other teachers. Any classroom that has a textbook will have similar reading standards to what we're doing in English. And there are 32 out of the 42 standards. There are 32 college and career anchor standards that California embedded in the grade level. So when you look at those 32 standards, they actually embed the actual language of what they call college and career anchor standards. I think the next slide. Oh, sorry, one more thing. Separate set of literacy standards for content courses. That's what I talked about with the idea that reading across the board is something that's really fundamental and important to them. The next slide that Amy put on kind of creeped me out at first, having a second grader. But the idea of the college readiness, these 32 standards are addressed in kindergarten and then scaffold all the way to 12th grade. So the goal at the end is something that will start. And as a high school English teacher, it's great to know for the first time, really, like what to expect from someone teaching 5th grade, someone teaching 6th grade, all the way up to me. So there's a really good scaffolding, and I'll demonstrate that in a minute. I included this slide just to show a little bit of a difference between our current content standards. So we had to go through and crosswalk what the current standard is and how it aligns to the new Common Core standard. Reading 1.1 states, and these are exactly as they're written, identify idioms, analogies, metaphors, and similes in prose and poetry, which is kind of all-encompassing. And this reading standard actually is something that's kind of a repetitive in the high school levels as well. The Common Core standard breaks it down a little bit more. So at the 7th grade, you're going to demonstrate an understanding of figurative language, such as bleeding, heart blood. Russell's metaphor earlier, which was amazing, you know, the bleeding heart blood that the kid at 7th grade would understand that. Maybe not hyperbole, but they'd understand that there's this nuances and meanings and denotations and things. And these are specific to 7th grade. So the 8th grade teacher would know that things like hyperbole and paradox were taught the year before. And then they could basically, you know, level upon that and keep going. An example of the spiral effect, and I think your slides are probably easier to see than up here. This is writing standard number 3. And what you're looking at is basically how it's presented at the 3rd grade level, and then W4 would be 4th grade 3, and then 8th grade 9 through 10 and 11 through 12. And this is an example, once again, of that earlier slide with the kid with the hat on, you know, of the standard just basically becoming more nuanced as you go through the grade levels. So in conclusion, I'm really excited about teaching these standards because I'm in the classroom, and what I'm looking at right now just as an English teacher excites me, and I think that we'll see a lot more cohesion with our departments as we go forward. So thank you. If there are any questions, too, that's a really short version. So are there any questions right off the bat from ELA? Thanks.
I'm Barbara Salitis, and I'm the 712, the secondary math TOSA. Like Scott, I am equally excited about the Common Core standards in mathematics. It's a pretty big shift in math, but I'm seeing it as a very positive shift. So the California standards in mathematics, the big focus or the big premise of the standards is to focus much more deeply, and they're embedded with what are called the mathematical practice standards, which will be K through 12. So it's essentially how we want to see our kids processing and doing mathematics. There's a balance of conceptual understanding and procedural skills. So the California standards for mathematics, or the common standards, are looking for much deeper application of mathematics and much deeper conceptual understanding. In the primary grades and elementary, they're going to focus very heavily on number and fractions. And I think what's been such a huge issue for math teachers and elementary school teachers is the idea that we go a mile wide and an inch deep. Now we're going to be a lot more focused on these concepts. So the kids are going to have a lot more time to learn. And a big part of the standards, they have the content standards, and then they have the 8 standards of mathematical practice. So this is what we want to see with our students, and this is to be taught throughout the grades, so from kindergarten through their 12th grade. This is how we want to see our kids processing math. So actually doing mathematics, I guess, is the way that I could explain it. really embedding them and engaging them in the process of learning math so they can be math, reasoning with mathematics and mathematical thinkers. And then this is showing how the standards are organized. So the grades kindergarten through eighth grade, they're in domains. And a domain is a group of standards that go together. So it's showing you the progression of the domains from kindergarten through eighth grade. So you could look at operations and algebraic thinking, and that's going to be from kindergarten through fifth grade. And then that would go to expressions and equations in sixth through eighth grade. And then a big shift that I'm seeing in the standards for mathematics is the way that we're now going to be looking at high school mathematics. So they're grouped in what are called conceptual categories. And so they'll show an algebra conceptual category in algebra all the way from an Algebra 1 course all the way through what a student would be doing in higher levels of high school mathematics. A big part of the high school math program will be modeling with mathematics. So actually taking mathematics and taking situations, so life situations, analyzing using statistics, and the kids are going to be really engaging themselves in life itself, so they can actually apply what they've known now or what they're learning in math. And then two things that I think California right now is still seeing eighth grade, the eighth grade standard would be Algebra 1. The Common Core, though, did develop an eighth grade Common Core math class. So California is looking at adopting both of them. They're considering them both to be appropriate for eighth grade students. And then the other thing that will be something that districts are definitely going to want to focus on is how we're going to have the sequencing of our math classes at the high school. So the way the standards are written, you can have a traditional pathway, so Algebra 1, Geometry Algebra 2, or we could be looking at the integrated math model. So those are big decisions that districts are going to be making.
So next steps for San Luis Coastal and our timeline as we transition to the California Common Core State Standards. What's happening already this year is we're providing overviews for our principals at our principals meeting as well as the district forum. Then our principals are taking it back to their sites and beginning to share all this information with our teachers. I know at least on the elementary level, in the month of January, Jill Larson, our math host, and I are going to be visiting 9 schools and 9 faculty meetings in 4 weeks and spending time with the teachers, really helping them kind of hold on and get a grasp of what these new standards look like, particularly in math. From here on out, we're going to begin to embed all of our professional development with the California Common Core State Standards. We think that's a critical piece. We want to create awareness not only for our teachers, but for our parents and our community members and as well as our students of what's coming up with the Common Core. We're going to continue as well to evaluate and enhance our district-developed performance-based assessments as well as our multiple choice assessments. And again, we're continuing to embed this in our PD as well as in all of our work with our 10 initiatives. By 2014-15, we will be in a full implementation year with the California Common Core. And what that means for us is that our CST will go away, the California Standards Test that we currently have in place in California, and it will be replaced with a Common Core assessment. And I keep saying it's going to require a lot of continued professional development. I can't say that one enough tonight. The assessment that's going to be coming to us by 2015, let me get this right here. The Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, or we're calling it SBAC at this point, was awarded funding from the U.S. Department of Education to develop that assessment system based on the Common Core. There's going to be two different kinds of assessment. Of course, the mandatory comprehensive accountability measures that happen before the end of the school year. That what will look different about it, it's going to include computer adaptive assessments and performance tests, meaning the children will actually take the tests on computers. And just like we have with some of our programs right now, depending on how a child does on the first answer, the second answer, the third answer, it may lead them to a different question, either up or below. The other thing by doing it computer adaptive is we're going to receive our results a lot faster. This is what they're promising us. It will be administered in grades 3 through 8, as well as grade 11 in both English Language Arts and Mathematics. And we're going to capitalize, as I said, on the strengths of computer adaptive testing. It's going to be efficient and precise measurement across the full range of achievement with that quick turnaround time. They're also going to offer through SBAC optional formative assessments. That these are what they're telling us is that this will provide student data throughout the academic year that will inform instruction, guide interventions, and help target professional development and ensure accurate measure of each student's progress towards college and career readiness. Rita and I and the curriculum TOSAs have been attending monthly meetings at the County Office of Education. Our county office is getting a lot of information from Sacramento County Office, who received a grant to become our leads in California on the Common Core. So as this news has been coming to us, we've been getting it here at the county, and we're trying to now get it out to you. But what we're finding, it's the news is coming quick and furious, and we're getting new information on a regular basis. So you have from me a promise that we will keep you in the loop as we hear more information. What I put here for you at the end is just some additional resources, which is include not only a copy of the standards. You also can find the crosswalks where they compare our current California standards with the California Common Core, and you see the SCOE ones. Those are things that we got from the Sacramento County Office of Education. With that, thank you. Any questions?
Mrs. Sheffer.
So as I understand it, I'm curious to hear from the TOSAs about this, and you as well, Amy, is that this sounds like a lot of information, a lot of changes, and I'm curious about how it sounds like over time you're sort of the job is you get the information, you learn what's coming down the pike, and your job is to help teachers figure out how to make whatever adjustments they need to make in their classroom curriculum to more adroitly include all this. I mean, how difficult? I mean, it sounds like a lot, but I would hope that the support we're providing with the TOSAs and with the ability to participate with the county office and the timeline, which seems not unreasonable, not undoable, but will require a lot of focus. I mean, how difficult does this seem?
I'll start and I'll let them answer as well, but I can't tell you it is. Couldn't be a more critical time to have these district TOSAs in place because they really are becoming our experts in these curricular areas.
The support is crucial.
Particularly in mathematics, we're just going to see some real shifts in what we're asking teachers to do in their classrooms to help our students really be ready for college. Not get to college, but really be ready to be successful college students, be ready to go on to the workforce. Our ELA, I'm feeling a little bit more confident about, and I put that confidence on the work that we've done in comprehensive literacy, which is, as you all know, is about getting kids thinking deeply about their reading, getting kids writing about their reading. We're on the right track there. We've got some serious work to do in the area of mathematics.
And we are working with the county. So all the districts are in the same position right now, and so that's what we're doing with the county and coming together, and we're going to have 5 sessions of working with other districts in San Luis Obispo County on pretty much rolling out the Common Core and then what we're going to do in order to provide the professional development for the teachers. And so we are actually, I think, doing very well in this district of embracing this and moving forward with it. So.
Yeah, it just seems that unless we can really, with great strength and support, pull the teachers along, we won't be able to pull our kids along.
Right, and that's what the piece of it is, that we are now going out to all the sites, and we are talking to the staff, and we are planning professional development or in-service for the teachers so that they are aware and educate them about the Common Core.
Great. Thank you very much.
Catherine and then Jim.
I just wanted to ask Mrs. Salaitis about, there's a slide, noteworthy changes, and I just can't read what is in the blue boxes between the difference between the traditional pathway and the integrated pathway.
Right. So the integrated math program would be where the students would be freshmen, so ninth grade, they'd be doing algebra, geometry, maybe a little trigonometry, and then it would just progress as they went through the grades. So by the time they reached the end of 11th grade, they would have had the integrated mathematics for 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, which would be the traditional mathematics. We break it up right now, Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2. So they would have had the same math standards at the end. And I heard that the reason why they chose 11th grade for testing the students was so that districts could, because we don't test in 9th and 10th, districts could then make the decision if they wanted to do integrated versus traditional. Because the students would have been had the same amount of mathematics or the standards at that point.
And are we leaning toward traditional or integrated at this point?
I do not know. It's a huge discussion right now, and I know that the publishers are very anxious and interested to see which way districts are going to be going in states, and it's huge, 44 states. So.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the publishers, because I can foresee that there's going to be a sea change in the kinds of materials, textbooks, and so forth that have to align with these standards. Is there going to be some sort of money attached to these from the federal government or from the state? Does anybody know that?
What does that mean?
What we do know is that our publishers are developing these bridge items to get us through until the next adoption. I believe the adoption is scheduled not until 2016. Don't hold me to that, but I've not heard about monies coming from the federal government to help us with that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'd add, too, for ELA, there is a huge appendix for the Common Core standards, which California didn't adopt the appendix, but we're looking at it anyway. And what we're finding is that a lot of the reading selections are selections that are found in our existing textbooks. So with ELA, even though some of them, the reading levels have changed, so there'll be some shifting around. But the materials that we have in English, we can use for this right now. So it'll just be a matter of getting the standards out to the teachers and showing them some of the differences there.
Is there any notion about whether the Common Core standards are going to be included in the reauthorization?
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. Mark?
Yeah, just real quickly. What I'm hearing is a great deal of excitement, and that's making me excited. There's things that are in the media and that they're being talked about that California standards were so much higher and these standards are lower. And I'm seeing you're shaking your head, so that's probably the answer. So that's just maybe a lot of street talk.
I mean, the California standards for English that we currently have are fine. I firmly believe as an English teacher these are better. And I like the idea, too, that, you know, regardless of where you start, I've taught 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. I can have a good idea of what's being taught at the other levels more specifically. So what I'm seeing for ELA is that they're stated a lot more specifically what you should be teaching at each grade level, what you should expect from the students. And so I'm excited about that. They look a lot, when we did the crosswalk, they looked a lot like the California standards, and I think they were probably borrowed kind of heavily from what we have, you know. So, but they just read, to me as an English teacher, they just read so much, you know, a lot more insight into what you should be teaching.
I wanted to mention one more thing before we excuse ourselves, and that's the district common assessments that you may have been hearing about that have taken place in our secondary and are being piloted in our elementary. Our district TOSAs developed these over the last few months, and they did them with the California Common Core in mind. And so even though we don't have these fully embedded in our classrooms yet by any stretch of the imagination. We thought it was very important as part of our professional development for all of our teachers is let's start bringing the awareness to our teachers of what a Common Core assessment might look like. And so the common assessments that were just done in the month of November in elementary and were just done at the secondary and some are actually still being done. Sorry, a little more familiar with the elementary here. All have elements of the California Common Core in them, as well as all included a performance-based assessment. We thought that was going to be a real eye-opener, especially in mathematics, for our teachers to start thinking about this change in how we assess kids, moving from not only multiple choice, but a performance-based assessment. So.
That's a big part of the assessment for the Common Core, and that's actually going to be 50%. Sorry. 50% of the assessment, from what I heard at the last county meeting, is going to be on the performance tasks. So we're going to ask our kids in mathematics to explain, justify, show. We're looking to see their processes in mathematics.
Well, thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 5. This is a resolution, number 091112. Positive certificate of adequate funding. Ms. Lang.
Sorry about that. Good evening. Tonight we're presenting our first interim financial report for your review and possible approval. Included in your agenda are all the significant changes to the general fund and also the other funds. And you'll recognize the general fund summary, which compares the last time you approved the budget at the 45-day revise with the current first interim as of October 31st budget. And I will very quickly go through the changes to the first interim so you know what you're approving. And we'll start with the revenues. And you can see that we started with a balance of $71,375,000. Our property taxes, the estimate came in a little bit lower than we had in the budget, so we had to take out $534,000 out of our revenue limit funds. Federal revenues went up a little bit, and this is due to posting all of our carryovers, and also we got our final entitlement amount for our federal jobs money, so that's been added to the budget. State revenues, this one's a little bit more complicated. Part of this, the biggest reason for the reduction is just a procedural change. As you may recall, we receive our adult ed money and our deferred maintenance money now in the general fund, and then we transfer it to the other funds. It used to be that we transferred it to the other funds through an expenditure account, and now the state wants us to transfer it through a revenue account. So it's decreasing our revenues in the general fund, but it's also decreasing our expenditures by the same amount, so the net effect is zero. But it makes it look like our revenues are decreasing. They really aren't. They're actually being considered in the other funds. There were a couple of other additions to state revenues, and one is the mandated cost came in at about $187,000. That was a nice surprise. And our transportation, I thought, was going to be reduced in our basic aid reduction, and it turns out it wasn't, so that was added back in. Local revenues, as you may recall, we increased those throughout the year as we received donations and facility fees, so that went up. Our total change to revenues for this first interim was a negative $116,632, bringing our balance to $71,259,000. Now, if we look at our expenditures, our beginning expenditure and transfer out balance was $77,885,000. We looked at our salary accounts, and we increased those for positions that weren't originally budgeted. And also, as sites receive their carryover and their budgets, they tend to move money from their books and supplies, which is where we give them all their money, and they move it into substitutes and hourly teacher. and also classified salaries. Benefits, we actually over-budgeted a little bit in our health and welfare account when we did the budget. We thought it was going to increase by about 10%, and overall it increased by less than that, so we're able to reduce the budget for the benefits a little bit. Same with books and supplies, that went down by $157,000, and that's mostly due to the sites and departments budgeting in other areas. Operating expenses, we looked at very detailed, and we found areas where we had been over budgeting and some holding accounts that we felt like we could just eliminate because we weren't using them, so we took those out of the budget. Capital outlay was down, but that was because we got a grant and we budgeted the entire grant in capital outlay, and it turned out some of the expenditures didn't qualify as capital outlay. This is just a change in our indirect cost, and then this transfers out. This is the adult ed and the deferred maintenance transfer out that we used to do in the expenditure account that we now do in the revenue account. So it brings our total changes to our expenditures, a reduction of $1.5 million, bringing our first interim expenditures to $76,379,000, which added $1,389,000 to our ending balance for first interim, which brought the balance to $20,706,000. Now, as you know, and if you look at your general fund summary, you can see the breakdown of what we are obligated to set aside and what we've chosen to set aside. One of those is our non-spendable funds. That includes our revolving cash fund and our what's it called, inventory that we can't spend. We have our restricted ending balances, which we can't use for any purpose other than what the state restricts it for. We have our 10% for economic uncertainty, which is based on our current expenditure budget. And then we've chosen to set aside our flexible resource balances, which is at about a little over $4 million. Most of that's the adult ed balance and the instructional materials realignment balance. We have our one-time revenues. Lottery balance is $1.5 million almost. And then we also set aside some money for the SLCTA agreement, which is not included in the first interim budget, and $1.8 million in case the state does pull that trigger and we get reduced at the mid-year. And then we have the other set-asides like the MAW, the mandated cost, catastrophic leave balance that we also deduct. That leaves an unassigned and unappropriate ending balance of $1.2 million. And unless you have any questions, I would ask you approve the first interim financial report.
I'm going to go to the public first to see if anybody from the public wants to address the board on this item. And seeing no one, I'll go back to the board. Mark?
I just had a real quick comment. I know in the last month or so we got a letter and a request to have a line item in the budget for arts. And I want to be very careful because in this first interim there's a line item for the Arts and Music Block Grant, and it's for about $110,000. And I want Julie to just explain, we talked today, if you can explain what you explained to me, that this is not what we budget for.
No, this is actually what isn't budgeted in this one category for Arts and Music Block Grant. We got this as restricted money probably in 2006-07, and then shortly after that they made it the flexible balance. And we do have some money budgeted, but this is the balance that we have remaining that isn't budgeted. So we are spending, and we also spend money on arts and music in lottery funds and in the general fund.
And it just, it's a sizable part of the general fund. I mean, we.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. And I just want to comment, I think. We're so fortunate to have $1.8 million that we can put aside in case the triggers are pulled. I hear from districts every day, and I read every day that districts are looking at insolvency in San Diego, for example. And I think our conservative financial stewardship really is demonstrated here in this budget, especially given these bleak times. I know that other districts not only are facing insolvency, but they're trying to figure out what they're going to do about layoffs. And I'm not hearing that we're talking about laying off any employees this year. And that really makes me happy. So thanks to everybody that was involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bring it back to the board for a vote. Somebody like to make a motion on this? Public hearing. We'll move on to item number 7, negotiations reopener proposal from California School Employees Association, chapter number 89. This is a public hearing. I'll open it to the public right now. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? And seeing no one, I'll close this item number 7. We'll move on to item number 8, which is a public hearing for the Board of Education's negotiation proposals for California School Employees Association, chapter number 89. This is a public hearing again. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll close that one. Item number 9, negotiations reopener proposals from Service Employee International Union Local 620. I'll open the public hearing. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? And seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing for item number 9. Move on to item number 10, the Board of Education's negotiations proposals for Service Employees International Union Local 620. Open the public hearing. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on item number 10. Let's move on to item number 11, which is acceptance of the audit report for 2010-2011. Mrs. Lang, do you have anything to add to that?
This is actually an action consent item. I think it just kind of got in
there. Oh, boy, I got there. I just like whipped through those, didn't I? Wow.
Well, no, it should be discussion, and we have corrected, and it's listed in the agenda as discussion.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, it's in there.
Okay. Any more discussion on the audit?
Okay, would someone like to make a motion to accept the audit report?
I'll move acceptance of the audit report for 2010-2011.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address this item? Seeing no one, is there any further board discussion? Bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor of accepting the audit report, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, carries 7-0. Move on to item number 12, developer fee accounting 2010-2011. Mr. Miller, you're on.
Thank you. This is a annual event that we bring forth for your review and approval. In the developer fees laws, there's allocations and language that allows us to charge certain amounts without having studies made to justify higher amounts. We currently are not at the highest level allowable, which is $2.97 per square foot. We continue to charge $2.63 a square foot for residential housing. It's probably an appropriate time in the near future to look at adjusting that amount, but currently the amount of building, the fact that we have capacity within our schools, other factors doesn't really motivate us to go forward with a developer fee justification report that would create some sort of a higher rate for ourselves. The fees are levied for the purpose of funding growth within the district, and they do things such as build new schools, buy new portables to accommodate growth, provide different types of facilities for children that are new to the district and require. TK is a good example, our transitional kindergarten program mandated by the state. We need to put down at least one new portable in the near future, and depending on the amount of growth in that program, we may find ourselves needing to put additional portables at other school sites. We're able to accommodate them currently at Monarch Grove and Los Ranchos based upon surplus classrooms, but C.L. Smith needed to have a portable put there for their accommodation, and there may be more in the near future. Those are the kinds of expenditures we have. If you look on 12.2, you'll see our beginning balance is $8 million. We had various revenues of $500,000, and we spent $92,000, and we have a current balance of $8.5 million.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Is there any discussion, Mrs. Roger?
Yeah, I just had one quick question. I can see, Mr. Miller, where everything is related to growth. Just wanting to confirm that whatever it was we did at Hawthorne with plumbing, I know Hawthorne is the school that's grown significantly, and so we're able to support that expenditure related to growth.
Is to nominate Mark Buckman.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address this? Bring it back to the board. Is there any board discussion? Well, seeing none, I'd like to move this forward then. Mark has done a good job as a delegate with CSBA, and I'd like to see him continue in that. So I will make that motion. Is there a second? Okay, we have a motion by me and a second by Dr. Eisendrath Roger. Any further board discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Move on to item number 14, request for reduced facility use rental fee by Farsi Language Learning Center. Mr. Miller.
We have an individual who's requested this item to be placed in front of the board. It relates to our facility use fee policies, and I was expecting some sort of a presentation.
And is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any discussion from board members?
Yes. Why is this a board item?
I believe it's a board item because the public has a right to request items be brought before the board and be placed on the agenda. Is that not correct, Dr. Prater?
That's not exactly what I meant.
I'm sorry.
Why is this a board item? Why wasn't there some effort? Was there an effort to accommodate the request on a staff level?
Yes.
What's the background?
What the board has is a policy about charging facility use fees predicated on identifying the category that the particular requester fits into. The example is we have nonprofit, we have for-profit, we have facility uses directly related to educational use by kids. And when we brought forth our previous facility use policies, we asked for rate increases because it hadn't been done for several years, and the board responded with allowing rate increases, but required us as staff to look at a particular group of facility users that didn't quite fit the for-profit and non-profit in the sense that they charged fees to assist children in learning opportunities. An example is, I think if you followed the elementary after school program, Mr. Chess, he comes in for a fee and he teaches the elementary school children how to play chess. The principals, the staff, they support his actions and feel he has a contribution to make in the after school program. If we were to classify him as either nonprofit or for profit, he's for profit. But his profit is not so great that and his endeavor isn't really to make a living. It's more like teaching kids in an area he has a passion for, but he turns a small profit in doing so. So he would fit into this category that the board asked staff to look at, which was to say, okay, we need to modify and perhaps put that type of a user in a nonprofit category so they can continue to help kids and not be charged at a higher rate. This individual brought forth his request. He doesn't meet the criteria that we would use to give him a nonprofit status Thus, he's being charged as a profit enterprise. And he has objected to that categorization, and he's bringing it to the board for a adjudication of what is his potential rate going to be charged. That's why you have it.
Clarification. He's being charged the secondary classroom fee. Is that correct?
Yes.
Has it been suggested to him that perhaps he would like to use an elementary school classroom for this purpose and pay less?
No, I mean, in the secondary, I thought you meant there's really only two fees of rate, and the one is as a, where's the rate schedule? Yeah, it's for-profit or non-profit, and he's being charged as a for-profit enterprise at $7 a classroom. It doesn't matter whether it's elementary or secondary, it's still 7. And then in 11-12, the rate goes to $15 for each of those elementary and secondary. And this is per the board's approved board policy.
I'm looking at 12-13, just that it goes to a differential. That's why.
I don't know why 12-13. I have to go back to staff and ask him why we came up with two different rates for 12-13. I'll find out for you.
Provide direction to the staff. Is there, Mrs. Holmes, I don't think we need to take a vote on this, do we? Or is that, what's your pleasure?
I think if you fail to take action, then you're not approving his request, and we'll so advise him.
So is there a motion to move this request for Dr. Mansart?
I would just like to say that I feel that we should support, to the extent possible, people who are offering their expertise to enlighten our students and our parents to the best of our ability. We don't have the ability to offer Farsi in our schools, obviously, and here is someone who is willing to step up and do this. And so I would hope that we could work with, staff would work with him to the extent possible within the fee schedule that we set up to make that feasible, because otherwise our students are going to lose out on that benefit.
Well the board has required us to make a judgment, and we've done that. And if the board wishes to support learning experience of various wide scope, then you have to recognize each use of a classroom engages direct costs. And those direct costs are what we're trying to recapture. We have no intention, and we seriously don't make a profit on renting out our classrooms to any real organization. Ultimately, we've got to cover our cleaning costs, our utilities, our overhead in terms of insurance and other aspects. And all we're trying to do is cover those direct costs. If you wish us, and this is a discussion I don't think related to this particular individual, but more into the facility use policy, and you might want to look at that piece, staff supports that kind of a review, because all we're doing is reflecting your interests as stated in your board policy. You want to change the board policy? That's good. But for this particular individual, we've done what I think you had intended us to do, review his aspects, and if he has a significant contribution to student learning, then to give him a nonprofit status. But we don't see that because the limited number of students, 4, that he actually engages, and I don't know if he's going to recruit more, but he does have another option, which is the adult school program. If he can engage 15 students, then he can engage in a for-profit action that is supported by our adult ed program. He currently doesn't have even that scope.
Mrs. Sheffer.
We spent a lot of time discussing this and really put some time and effort into coming up with this phase and schedule. You know, we went from the initial, as I recall, the initial proposal was quite a large jump that would occur all at one time, and as the board considered that carefully and decided to have the phase-in schedule, and to support staff in coming up with a fair and reasonable implementation of this. And I would express my continued support for that methodology of going forward. I would personally feel that it's unnecessary to have, I don't know what, how many might then come before us on a case-by-case basis, but I have faith and would like to continue to support what we as a board decided to do when we implemented this. So I'm comfortable with what's been, the way this has been going on. Russell and I spoke about it a few weeks ago for clarification as to how it's been working, and it seems overall to be working well and fairly and reasonably. So I support having staff go ahead and make those decisions.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, this is more an informational question. So if he were to try to move this under the umbrella of adult education, would that change the fee for the classroom?
Yeah, the adult ed program supports supports all of the uses of the classroom, and they get a fee from the student who comes and reimburses the teacher for their time on a scheduled basis. So there's a quid pro quo there. He loses control of 100% of the revenue, but he gains access to the facilities for a no-cost basis.
Thank you.
Okay. So is there anybody from the board that would like to make a motion on this item to reduce the fees? Because what I'm hearing is that...
And found three to be considerable, and then met again today to come up with, or yesterday rather, to come up with a final consensus on what we would discuss with you tonight. So we found that two of those really presented the best options for final consideration. But the subcommittee really thought that it would be valuable for the full board to see those demonstrations and make a choice between the two rather than have the subcommittee just do that on its face. So we would propose that the board agree to a special meeting, or perhaps we could include a demonstration the night that you might have an expulsion hearing, sometime when you could have a brief demonstration of both of the finalist programs, and those would be board docs and Novus agenda. Excuse me. The second part of the program of the project here is for us to decide how the board would implement it in terms of technology. And there's a lot of interest in what kind of a tool you would like to use for your individual access to a paperless agenda system. And the great majority of interest seems to be moving in the area of an iPad, which is a very user-friendly tool. We do not want to restrict that. Each board member, if we move forward with the proposal the subcommittee agreed to, would be able to choose whichever tool you feel suits you, and that might be a notebook computer or a small laptop. But we felt that the iPad was the best option, and so the prices that we estimated to try and come up with the estimate here are based on that technology being the platform that most of you would select. So I prepared some cost figures for you to look at tonight, which break out the cost of continuing the paper-filled system, which runs us about $30,000 a year to generate the agendas that you see and that we distribute to staff and the community for each of our meetings. We have cost estimates for the two finalist packages, which are in the neighborhood of about $10,000 a year, for their software license to implement that system. And then on the second, the back of the page that I handed out, is a proposal for a technology tool. And what we are suggesting is, based on the costs we figured, that the board take action tonight to approve a technology allowance. This would allow us to issue that payment to the board now, and you could make those purchases, and then over the next several weeks, you'd actually have that tool in your hands and begin to familiarize yourselves with how that works in preparation for the implementation of a paperless agenda while we make the selection of the finalist candidate and start that program actually going into effect. The presentation for the technology selection includes an allowance for a mid-range Apple II that would provide both Wi-Fi and 3G access, which means you'd be able to use that tool regardless of where you are. The 3G lets it connect through cell towers in any location. Also an allowance that would let you purchase some accessories for a cover and peripherals that tool might use that meet your personal preferences, and a printer if you choose to do that. We're trying to move to a fully paperless system, but there are some complex issues that come due on paper that are really hard to digest on screen that you might want to see on paper, so you'd be able to purchase a printer to do that. Without a cushion to pay for the taxes on those items. And then to support that wireless technology, apart from that initial payment of a technology acquisition, each of you would need to access a monthly account so that that 3G system would work on your computer. And the $30 monthly allowance we felt was an adequate program. You could certainly choose to do whatever you wanted, but we thought if the district funded that $30 account, that would be sufficient. And we would set that up on an annual stipend similar to your mileage payment, because that's a recurring expense. So if that is acceptable to you, you might have some questions here tonight, but we would be asking for you to agree to that secondary demonstration, but to take action to approve the cost information on technology tools in the amount presented so that we can have those payments issued to you and let you begin your personal acquisitions.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? And seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Can I just start off with a question real quick? So would this stipend be taxable?
So you can purchase that plan with a discounted rate with them individually without having to have the district set those up.
And that's about 25%, I think, isn't it? 15%? 15% off your initial. Yeah. Okay. Other questions from board members? Okay. So would somebody like to make a motion that we accept this proposal, that we go ahead and do the stipend for the purchase of the technology tool? I'm pretty blown away that it costs $30,000, so $31,000 a year to do our paper board agenda. Yes, Mrs. Roger.
It occurs to me, and I'm wondering, we haven't talked about, we've been so focused on how the board gets its information and agenda, but would we still be publishing it, and how would we get it to the libraries, and what happened?
The libraries have not been receiving paper agendas for a couple of years. When we started emailing those links, I contacted them, and they said they preferred merely to do that, so they save it as a favorite on the computer in the library system and help people find that. So community users who go there to look for the agenda read it online. We distribute to our staff. We no longer mail any packets to the community. They all get that email link that I send to you and look at it online. So I have no community members asking for a paper copy any longer. The one copy that I send out goes to the SLCTA office, and they will now just get that electronic link. All our staff members will receive a link. There is a legal provision, so if somebody asks for a paper copy, we have to provide it, but we will not be preparing it in advance.
So the ones that were posted, I think, in the teachers' lunchrooms at the school sites and what have you.
That will no longer be
happening.
There.
It will just go to each.
Well, I can expand the distribution list. The email that I send now is a limited distribution list that includes you, many community members who have asked for that notification, and selected staff members. We get the principals and their assistants receive notification, and a lot of union representatives receive that in a paper version. We can simply include all of our staff now and give them that link so that they know. I mean, it's certainly posted on our website. Anybody who goes to the website can look for it easily.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessary.
But the link is easy because you know it's today, and you click the link, and it takes you directly there. And we can just change that distribution list to expand that to include more people.
I don't know if that's necessary. I don't know how many people are really interested, but want to make sure that at least each school site gets the information they need so that their staff can be aware. However that happens, Mrs. Holmes.
Well, this might be something you want to keep an eye on if we do this. I've been tracking the cost of just printing the packets over the last couple of years. And one agenda packet costs between $2.50 and $5. So if we need to run a few, that's the ballpark you're looking at to publish those, plus some amount of time to manage that. We could simplify it by simply saying, this is it, put a staple in it, and it's done, and not trying to do any organizing and...
I don't think I've expressed myself well. I just want to make sure that each school site has the opportunity to access the information, whether it be, you know, posted in the teacher's lunchroom or whatever, that, you know, you can go to the website and get the agenda packet or... So it's not that we need to do paper.
So we should put a notice in the lunchroom to tell them that's where they can find it? Is that what you're suggesting?
If that's what it takes, okay. Sure. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if it's just announced in a staff meeting,
sure,
that probably would be sufficient, just so people know where to go to get it if they want it.
Well,
sorry, it is possible to notice them on group-wise, in mass, if necessary.
Okay. So we would need a motion to move this forward. And I guess there are really two things you're looking for, Mrs. Holmes. The first is the board's approval of the proposal for the equipment. And then second, to have the two vendors, the two finalist vendors, come to the board and display their products. So the board and 7-0. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to have an item pulled. Item number 16, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 17, approval of 2011-2013 agreement with San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. 18, acceptance of donations. 19, disposition of surplus property. 20, approval of purchase orders. 21, approval of warrants and payroll. Would somebody like to make a motion on that?
I move approval of the items as listed.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Is there any discussion from the public on these items? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 23. Advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to, any board members that would like to talk about advanced agenda? Mr. Buckman.
Just really quickly on the bill that I mentioned earlier in the ROP report, if we could either have some feedback from the administration and if necessary bring it back to this advanced agenda item. This is the one that would allow the ROP classes to become part of the requirements for graduation as well as taking the place of an arts class.
So is that something that you'd go ahead, Ms. Quisenberry?
Well, I want to concur with that. I think okay. That's an important.
So could we? Is that something we could do on a Friday packet? Okay. Anything else? Okay.
I also have something yes. That probably go in the Friday packet. Is it possible for us to delineate the monies that are spent for the music program and the sources of that money and the amounts per site and so forth?
Yes. It's spread out throughout our budget. It includes, you know, salary issues and benefits and supplies and other things. But, you know, if the board wishes that, then we can provide that information. The source of the money is all our local property taxes. There are no real grants available anymore, and there's no state-restricted money anymore. So it's all our basic general education money, if that's what you're getting at. But the actual expenditures, we can talk about that.
Okay, thank you.
If you're going to make that as a future board item, or do you want that just information in like a Friday update?
I think just a Friday update.
Got it.
That's possible.
Good. I would support that too. Anything else? Let's move on to item number 24, reports by board members. Is there anybody that would like to make a report tonight? Mr. Quisenberry.
Just quickly to remind folks that this Saturday is a fundraiser for the Maxine Lewis shelter in Los Osos, and it's an opportunity for people to buy some Christmas gifts and contribute to a very worthy cause, and that will be all day. And there will also be entertainment, some provided by students from Baywood, Morobe High School, Los Osos Middle School, and so the band, the choir, and so forth. So you're all invited, and come contribute and spend some money.
Great. Anything else? And just a reminder, the Los Osos Christmas Parade, 10 o'clock Saturday, and I know Baywood School is planning on marching in the parade, and I'm sure Monarch Grove will be too. Seeing no other business before the board, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everybody, and happy holidays, and we'll see you all in January.